Hello, and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the 1977 Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition Monster Manual. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters I find in it, their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. As you can probably hear, I've got a little bit of a sore throat still, so this is going to be kind of a quiet episode of Monster Man. I hope you don't mind. In this episode, we finally finished up our journey through the S section of the Monster Manual, and we're getting started on T. Before we do that, though, we've got some business to take care of. First off, a new Patreon backer to thank. This is someone who's gone to patreon.com/monsterman and pledged as little as $1 a month to help support the show. And if, like today's backer, you pledge at the $2 or higher level, you'll also get access to our companion show, Patron Deities, in which I take an in-depth look at the Deities and Demigods book. So let's all thank new supporter Sam Thompson. Sam, thank you very much. We've also got some listener mail to read. Mookie McMook had some comments about episode 58, which included the slug, giant. Mookie, can I call you Mookie? Writes, while an acid-spitting slug is certainly bad news, scaled-up slugs don't need any help being terrifying. Have you ever seen how they eat? You're looking at a creature that eats you by sandpapering your skin off with a tongue covered in teeth. You think your chainmail will protect you? That's why it's covered in acid. As usual, horror fiction has nothing on nature. Bonus points. The crocodile ice fish, a translucent creature with colorless blood. It's an ambush predator in Antarctica and consumes fish up to 50% of its own body length that can be over a foot long. And I think Mookie intends that translucent monstrosity is an answer to the slithering tracker, which was featured back in episode 57. And Mookie was kind, enough to send some links to really grotesque stuff about how slugs feed, so thanks, I guess? Well, that's true. I mean, there are lots of aspects of, you know, small animals that do actually become more grotesque when you bring them up to a scale where they apply to humans. So maybe giving it acid-spitting powers is kind of gilding the lily, but on the other hand, I think you'd have to run the risk that player characters could just kind of easily outrun it otherwise. Our second message comes from listener and Monster Man Contest Grand Prize winner James Bailey, who sounds a cautionary note about the Troll special episode, in which I cited David Day's Tolkien bestiary. James writes, Day's books are often loved for their creativity and usually have excellent illustrations. Yeah, I'll say, that thing's got illustrations by like Ian Miller and John Blanche. Anyway, but they're notoriously unreliable as guides to what Tolkien actually wrote and contain numerous, not huge, but potentially trip-up-ish, especially in some of Day's typologizing of Tolkien's more ambiguous view of monsters, errors, or large extrapolations. He definitely goes for flamboyance over accuracy to Tolkien, which I guess may make his books better for secondary inspiration, but for the purposes of being a guide to Tolkien for Monster Man, might mean that it's worth double-checking stuff. Duly noted, James, although I'll tell you right now, I will never double-check stuff in Tolkien. I don't mean to be a pain, but that just sounds very unlike something that I would do. I tell you what, though. Secondary sources like the Tolkien Bestiary, which, as I said, I think these days is called the Encyclopedia of Middle-earth, but secondary sources like that are actually pretty useful in the main for our purposes, that is to say, for the purposes of Dungeons & Dragons, because we're not intending to replicate the original accurately, right? We're just looking for inspiration, but we're looking for an inspiration that's usable. And, you know, one of the features that Middle-earth shares with real life is that it has a lot of ambiguity and a lot of things that, you know, where there are categories that are fluid and have unclear boundaries. And that's what real mythology is like, but it's less useful in a Dungeons & Dragons context. This is like a lot of what we see in patron deities generally, is that there are these boundaries that games need to create, but that real mythology doesn't stick to at all. Not really. But that's a useful warning note, especially when, as in the Troll episode, I'm trying to explore the origins of something and kind of go back and look where it came from. So I think that's a fair comment. Okay, with those points out of the way, let's move on to our first monster, and hoo boy, it is a doozy. I'm talking about the Thought Eater, which is like a skeletal platypus kind of thing. It swims around in the ether, and when it senses psionic energy, it numbs it up. And if it can't get psionic energy, it can eat magic, with an equivalent scale of psionic power points per spell level, or it can eat up your intelligence. Now, one note, the language in this entry is not what we would use today. So, like, if you have intelligence 2, that's idiocy. If it's intelligence 3, that's imbecility. And if you have intelligence 4, you're a low-grade moron. And that is referring to the, I should think even by the late 70s, antiquated use of those terms to refer to people with learning disabilities. I don't know about that necessarily. This actually raises a little bit of a point, which is that one of the things that is so charming about the Gygaxian writing style is the kind of self-conscious archaism, something that really does sort of help with evoking its mood. But sometimes they can lead you down a path you don't necessarily want to go down, where we have abandoned older terms for valid reasons. Anyway, the Thought Eater. It's a strong gonzo monster. It's got a fun little mechanic. It represents an unusual threat, and that players get to have fun puzzling out. And it's one of the few psionic monsters that kind of doesn't just work on psychics, and it's not defeatable only by psychics, though it helps. As always, though, the connection to psionics, which, as I've said before, is a part of the game I don't really care about, stops it from being a complete winner for me. It does have an absolutely fantastic illustration with a big goofy grin and googly eyes. Just amazing. I mean, I sound like I'm making fun of it, but I genuinely appreciate it. Alright, next up we have the Tick, Comma, Giant. Like a lot of giant animals in the Monster Manual, the Tick, Comma, Giant is only really giant by Tick standards. It's still sized small, and mechanically it's a little bit like the Sturge. It latches onto you, sucks out your blood until it's full, and then it drops off. There are only certain ways that you can remove it, and it can give you a disease. So, in a lot of ways, it's a bit like a real tick. I mean, ticks don't kill you quite so often, but they can be quite dangerous. I remember when I was a kid, everybody was very concerned that we should all know the relevant steps to avoid getting Lyme disease, which is what you get from ticks. You know, it occurs to me that I've never actually seen a tick in real life. I've seen pictures of them, of course, but they're hideous things, really, and the way they get all kind of like fat with blood is quite a horrible sort of concept. And I think this actually works pretty well. It gains its power, like most successful giant animal monsters, from the everyday kind of nuisance and gross-out factor of the regular animal. So if you've ever had a tick, or if you've ever seen a person or animal who had one, you can visualize how hideous it would be to be bit by a giant one. And also, it's got to be a little bit humiliating to have your hit points worn down by something that you have to regularly check your dog for. Speaking of animals, the next monster on our list is the tiger. Now, the tiger comes in two varieties. You got your regular tiger, and then you got your Smilodon, which is the larger, more dangerous version. There's nothing really to say about tigers. They're pretty great. They make a great encounter for any sort of appropriate adventure setting. Now, there is a weird point about what those appropriate adventure settings are, because the entry for the Smilodon says it's seldom found elsewhere other than the Pleistocene epoch, which is the kind of thing this book often says about prehistoric animals, and which just raises more questions than it answers. So, I mean, first off, obviously, the Pleistocene, if that is indeed how you pronounce it, isn't a place, and secondly, this is a fantastic world, so presumably it doesn't share our Earth's geological eras or our Earth's prehistory, but they often refer to this in discussing animals that come from real Earth prehistory. I don't really get what that's all about. Anyway, it's a tiger, it's fantastic, a barbarian chief rides around on one just to prove what a baller he is, a fighting one feels tense because, you know, you've seen a tiger at the zoo, and you have looked at it and thought, man, that thing could do me a mischief if it got loose. Which just gives it more power than if it had the exact same stats and were, you know, a Wabathrax. I say this every time. The only excuse is that it remains true every time. I would complain that the Smilodon, despite the common name, Sabertooth Tiger, is not actually closely related to a tiger. But this is still a better way to organize one of these sections. I'm looking at you, Mammoth and Mastodon. And finally, we have the Titan. Titans are interesting. In Greek mythology, the Titans were basically a kind of race of gods who preceded the Olympian gods that we're all familiar with. And they were in turn the children of an even earlier race of primordial gods. And it was two of the Titans, Cronus and Rhea, who were the parents of the elder Olympian gods. So Poseidon, Hades, and Zeus, Hera, Demeter, and Hestia. Quite interesting because I would normally think that you'd find the Titans in the Deities and Demigods book. Of course, this is 1977, and the Deities and Demigods book isn't going to come out until 1980. It's kind of an interesting overlap between the monstrous and the mythological here. So Titan is not quite a god. And that's basically what you get here. You get a very powerful giant with a kind of Greek-themed appearance, up to 22 hit dice, a huge range of combat, magical, and psionic abilities. And in terms of expressing their power, this is in some ways kind of a preview of Deities and Demigods, which will have a more robust system for dealing with these. And they hang out with storm giants. And because this entry doesn't give the Titans much in the way of personality, and if you were going to use mythological Titans, you would base them on sort of the specific individuals. Well, I just think what the Titan winds up being here is kind of a super giant, right? Like, it might be the boss that you would fight at the end of a scenario in which there were a lot of giants. I don't know. They are pretty hard. It might be one of the most dangerous creatures in the Monster Manual, just in terms of the variety of different abilities that they can have. Anyway, Titans are cool. They sit right on the edge of mythology and religion. You know, Titan has a certain, I don't know, has a certain ring to it that gives them a very different meaning from giant. Even if you said, you know, super duper giant or giant wizard or whatever, it wouldn't be the same as a Titan. So I think Titans are pretty valuable, but in order to really get full use out of them, you'd have to integrate them into the mythology of your campaign, rather than just have them sitting around cloud castles bossing giants about or whatever. All right, that's it for our first look at the T section of the Monster Manual. Join me next time as we look at the Titanothere, the Toad, Giant, the Trapper, and maybe the Tree Ant on Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. Thank you for listening.
Do you have a favorite monster? Do you have something you'd like me to talk about? Find me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or send me an email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. If you want to support the podcast, you can do so at patreon.com/monsterman, where you'll find lots of extra bonus content and my brand new show, Patron Deities, in which I explore the deities and demigods Advanced Dungeons & Dragons book. Check it out. Thanks for listening.